No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need to get treated, not seated. Shasta Regional Medical Center is located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Redding. They have emergency room doctors and staff that guarantee you will be seen by a medical professional within 30 minutes of your arrival. Shasta Regional Medical Center believes in delivering patient-centered health care with compassion and respect for every patient and their family.
This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick. Kara, do you have any news for us today?
Yes, I do. So, a father of one of the Sandy Hook shooting victims is due to receive a settlement of $450,000 from the author of the conspiracy book, quote, No One Died at Sandy Hook, a volume in which the author, James Fetzer, makes the case that Sandy Hook was a hoax put on by the government to enact stricter gun control laws. In the book, he claimed that the father in question fabricated his son's death certificate. Similar suits have been ongoing against Alex Jones of InfoWars, who has also claimed that no one died at Sandy Hook. The book itself was pulled from the bookshelves over the summer with an apology from the publisher. In Hong Kong, protesters and police exchanged tear gas and firebombs as thousands participated in an illegal march. The protests began 4 months ago over a bill that would establish extradition back to the mainland in Hong Kong. However, the protests are not entirely about the bill. The protesters are overwhelmingly demonstrating in support of democracy. However, few expect the authoritarian Chinese government to cave before the movement does. Finally, Hillary Clinton has reminded us that she's not above the odd conspiracy theory herself, floating concerns that Tulsi Gabbard may be recruited by the Russians to run as a third-party candidate in 2020, splitting the Democratic vote and ensuring a Trump victory. I'm not making any predictions, but I think they've got their eye on somebody who is currently in the Democratic primary and are grooming her to be a third-party candidate, Clinton said in an interview. She's the favorite of the Russians. They have a bunch of sites and bots and other ways of supporting her so far. She appeared to mean Gabbard. Gabbard doesn't have different views than the other Democrats on much, with the notable exception that she was against the war in Syria from the start and in fact met with Bashar al-Assad in 2017, which would make her more favorable to the Russians from a foreign policy perspective. However, there does not appear to be any evidence that she will attempt a third-party run. I guess we'll see. Back to you, Chauncey.
All right, so it begins. It begins, it begins. You know...
Yes, it does.
It's all political from here on out. We're going to have a hard time getting any ghosts and big feet in the next coming months. You know, my wife and I, we were watching the...
If by coming months you mean literally more than a year.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, my wife and I, we were watching the first presidential debates, and we're thinking to ourselves, wow, 20 people, that's a lot. And then 10 people, we're thinking, wow, that's a lot. And for one... there's like some factoid that in the last 60 years at this point in the election, the front runner has never actually won, meaning statistically it's highly not going to be Biden, but
that's funny.
And then the other thing is we were thinking like, wow, you know, we've never seen so many candidates up there. And we found out that the reason why we've never seen so many candidates up there is this is the first year that this level has been televised. Normally they don't even start televising this stuff until later.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we'd have to buy tickets if we were this interested, you know. I was talking to our friend Jake about it today, and he said it's like football drafts, you know. Nobody cared about the first football drafts, and now people are treating it like it's March Madness. But historically, nobody really cared, you know.
No, it's true of so much in life that it's always been this way. We just see more of it now, you know.
Yeah,
there's so much more information available today, but...
Yeah, it just makes me wonder what we're picking, you know?
Yeah.
Why are we picking these instead of, you know, more superhero movies? You know, there's plenty of those. Watch those. So Sandy Hook, you know, how do you fake the death of children? I don't understand how you do that in the United States.
Well, there's a book about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so weird and so...
It's completely insane.
It is insane, but man, the cojones on these guys to be able to say this when they know that the person could show up at their doorstep or at their work and basically say, you know, these people are obviously just don't care how people feel as long as they make money off of selling food goo, post-apocalyptic food goo, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think this author or Alex Jones or anyone like that has ever believed the nonsense they're peddling. It's kind of just, you know, you got to take the money from the schizophrenic somehow. And
yeah, I don't know. I find
that's
it
what they're about.
I find it extra depressing because I like it when the nut jobs believe. You know, I find it enjoyable, but when they obviously don't. I can't stand it. You know, it's manipulative. But when they believe, I'm just all, okay, you know, I'll go along with this, you know. This person needs somebody to listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. To be clear for our listeners, our problem with Alex Jones is not that he is crazy. It's that he's a sellout.
Right, yes, absolutely. That is absolutely my problem. People can't help crazy.
It's so true.
They can help being a sellout. Yeah. And then Hong Kong.
They should make medication for that.
Yeah. Hong Kong, man, these poor people, they are fighting a losing war for the right cause.
Yes, they are.
I don't see how they could possibly win.
No, me neither. And frankly, neither do they. You know, there's been plenty of interviews with the protesters and that sort of thing. And they basically said, yeah, we're not going to win this, but... I like their philosophy, which is like that you still fight when there's a good reason to, regardless of the odds of victory, because, like, you know, not fighting is not better. It's
right.
Not going to help them. You know, this kind of thing may hopefully pave the way for real democracy, you know, decades down the line or something like that. That's kind of the best you can hope for.
And they may have stood a chance had the world got behind them, but it just shows how much money the free world has invested in China to
exactly.
The point where we're totally willing to back down. And we seem to be backing down across the board, you know, with the pullout from Turkey. I saw Mitt Romney, somebody who I don't normally agree with. His statement was basically, has the U.S. becomes so weak that we're willing to back down from a country like Turkey.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I think, you know, we live in a global economy. There's good reasons not to anger China. The Turkey thing was purely just... There was zero logic there. It was like, we can stand up to Turkey. We have that capability. We just...
Right, yeah. I don't know. I don't pretend to understand
random
all...
Random reasons.
Right, I don't pretend to understand all of the foreign run-ins and stuff like that. I just...
Yeah. Well, no one understands why Trump ordered a hasty withdrawal from Turkey. This was a purely unilateral decision by him without the input of any of his advisors, like a blindsided them. And Trump isn't particularly in the habit of explaining himself in a cogent way, so... Like, we are probably never going to know what the reasoning was there exactly.
Right.
So, that's
fine. You know, finally, we got about 1 minute up until break here, but finally, I got to say about Hillary Clinton, you know, in a world that elected Donald Trump, who likes these conspiracies and stuff like that, and I'm not coming down on him, I like conspiracies as well. It seems like all of a sudden now Hillary Clinton might just be presidential material after all, if she supports these conspiracies.
Yeah, she's finally learning.
Yeah, now she knows.
The voters literally do not care what is true.
Right.
So...
All right, well, we're coming up on break. You know, you're going to want to stick around. Our guest is Charles Christian. He's going to share some awesomely nostalgic, weird, dark tales with us, and you most certainly don't want to miss out on that here on Radio Wasteland.
Celebrating 20 years in business, Five Star Bank is a community business bank serving small to medium-sized businesses and is a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Five Star Bank was founded in 1999 by a group of local entrepreneurs who wanted to create personalized banking services inspired by shared vision and goals. Today, Five Star Bank is among the top 5% of performing banks in the nation for banks of its size. Five Star Bank proudly serves farmers, ranchers, and growers in the agricultural community, commercial real estate developers and construction, those who lead nonprofits and churches, and entrepreneurs in emerging technology. Five Star Bank is also committed to small businesses through a robust SBA department. They understand that when it comes to business, timing is critical. Their sense of urgency and speed to serve are part of the foundation of their success. Visit fivestarbank.com and visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
That doesn't happen to men.
It's not just a woman's issue.
It only happened once.
I will intervene.
But he's such a nice guy.
We will look out for each other.
What did she think would happen?
I will step in.
It's just the way people are.
It's on us to change the future for our children.
We will change the culture.
Get involved. One safe place. OSPShasta.org/change the culture.
Reading Electric Utility cares about the whole community, and we offer an income-qualified residential energy discount program that can save you up to $400 a year on your energy bill. And once per year, CARES bill credit up to $300. To find out if your income qualifies you for a residential discount program and CARES program, call 339-7200. That number again is 339-7200.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in just one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. These tests do not prevent colon cancer. Only a colonoscopy can do that by removing polyps before they become cancerous. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction with your security tip of the day. If it doesn't look right, it probably isn't. Many people hang around to investigate what may be a crime only to become a victim themselves because they confront a violent criminal. Leave the area and call your local law enforcement agency immediately. Another important part of your personal protection plan may be the use of a firearm. If that's your choice, give NFI a call at 999-1822 or find and register for one of our popular CCW courses at usgunpro.com. Remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Charles Christian, urban myth and folklore author, as well as host of the Weird Tales radio show.
What does weird tales entail? You know, we live in this world of so many weird tales that it sort of has turned into ghost weird tales and so on and so forth. But my impression is that your weird tales are really trying to take it a step beyond to the weirdness in the weirdness.
Yeah, well, it's partly that. It's partly my experience that there are an awful lot of weird things going on in the world that actually life is stranger than fiction. And well, that's what intrigues me.
Yeah. Andrea, our girl who does our scheduling, she said that
Andrea's a woman.
Okay, well, I don't know. I'm not trying to insult her. She said that you were going to share three tales with us, and we have three segments in our show in between breaks, so without further ado, we should probably hop right into one, or we're going to lose track of our time. You know, why don't you just start us off and hit us with some weirdness?
Right, well, I suppose what I originally got interested in the weird was when I was a kid. I was of the age that grew up when, certainly in the UK, television wasn't all-pervasive. Broadcasting shut down at 10 o'clock at night. There was nothing much during the daytime. And it was still that era where over Christmas we'd sit round a log fire and in the dark or by candlelight and tell ghost stories and scare each other with tales. And obviously some of them were fictional ghost stories, but other ones were people telling their own real life encounters. And it intrigued me from then on. I suppose it's almost still in the oral tradition. And it started that way.
You know, that's Christmas is like my favorite holiday, of course, for somebody who does a paranormal show is Halloween. But Christmas is easily my second favorite because of all the darkness. And like, if you listen to the old carols, I have to like tell people, I'm just all, oh yeah, ghost stories. They talk about them in all the old carols, but none of us, at least here, we don't do it at all anymore.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I say we did that, but the other factor was I lived a house I grew up in is an old, the origins are medieval, in a seaport town on the east coast of England, and it was one of those places that had strange cellars and doorways that didn't appear to lead anywhere and odd tunnels that were blocked off. I mean,
is that a type of hindsight?
With the benefit of hindsight, I realise it was because property had been sold and different bits had been hived off over the years, so it wasn't one integral property. But it was this intriguing property for a kid where you'd go down there, and I recall there was an entrance to a cellar that looked like a set of cupboards, and it hinged open, and there was this chasm beneath you of the old coal cellar. And up in the lofts, it was all old timbers, and they clearly had been, because it was just right on the seafront, by the harbour, it was utilised by, they'd added bits on with bits of old ship timber. And there was a tale that shipwrecked mariners used to be put up by one of my great-grandmothers up in the loft. And supposedly on some nights you could hear still in their sea boots marching across the loft space, which is very cheering for a young kid because that was right above my bedroom. So.
Yeah.
Gee, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, but I loved all that sort of stuff when I was a kid. You definitely, piqued up Kara's interest, you know, with the coal cellar and
that
all
sounds
that.
Eldritch.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds just...
It is. it was... Elements of it were, it was like, only later I realised it when I started reading stuff, but it's like living in an H.P. Lovecraft novel.
That's exactly what I was
one
thinking.
Of his... seaside settings, and the property definitely had non-Euclidean geometry in its layout. Yeah, it was very weird, and you know, there were bits of old walls that were 3 feet thick that were on top of a new brick wall that was only 6 inches thick, and say, very strange house. But I say, my first real experience, and again, it was one of those that only came out much later, at the time I accepted the explanation, and there was this sensation on some nights as if something was grabbing the bottom of my bed and giving it a shake, so the whole bed would shake from top to bottom, and it was enough to wake me up. And initially I thought, well, maybe it's my parents just checking that I'm asleep and nothing's happened to me overnight or anything. But they said no, it wasn't them. And my father said, oh, It's just where the wind hits the house. Again, say it was a relatively exposed house on the seafront and the wind did hit it. But it was only years later it dawned on me that the bit of the house that stuck out where I was being hit by the wind, if the wind had hit it that way, it would have knocked me from side to side, if you like, in a direction. It couldn't have knocked me the way the bed was shaking.
Right.
Which then sort of led me, you know, years later, to think, well, what was it causing it? There were no other effects. There were nothing else sinister. Just this strange something coming into center, you know, something in the bedroom causing my bed to move from top to bottom, shaking me on a night. And I say, it was quite a frequent incident. And I say, looking back with a bit of hindsight, I realised that the explanation that it was the wind couldn't have been true, and I knew it wasn't my parents, and there was nothing else.
Right.
So what was it?
Yeah, that's wild. It was an upset seafaring coal stacker, you know, coming from the creepy house that you were in. That is.
Well, exactly. And I say, you know, my parents, I suppose, well, in those days, you know, these were pre-Dr. Spock days, so you didn't sort of encourage children. You told them tales, which often terrified them.
Right.
So one day I was going out on my bicycle, on travelling off to see a friend and going up into the countryside nearby, and I happened to mention to my grandmother where I was going, and it was a place called Raincliffe Woods, that doesn't matter. And she says, oh, Raincliffe Woods. And she noticed I'd picked up an apple to take with me, bike. And she said, oh, I remember a tale from that. It was in the First World War. And so obviously, what was the story? And the story was, a young soldier, home on leave from the war, had gone for a walk in the woods and had spotted something he was interested in, but slipped, fell down a bank, hit his head on a rock, and succumbed, whether to exposure or from the injuries. It's not exactly clear. And he was never found. Everybody thought he'd, you know, run away or whatever. And it was years later, somebody else was down there and noticed an apple tree growing. And they went down there, and there was a skeleton, still with remnants of an old uniform on, with an apple tree growing up through the ribcage. And the story was, just like me, this young man had gone out there with an apple in his pocket, had a fatal accident, the apple had grown, and wow. Gone through. Okay. So I thought, thanks, Gran, that's a really cheery story.
I love what you find to be nostalgic and fun today would be considered child abuse. You know?
Well, it is, exactly.
Yeah. Very funny. You are listening to our guest, Charles Christian, here on Radio Wasteland. You can find out more about Charles at urbanfantasist.com. And, you know, stick around, come on back, because we have more Weird Tales with Charles Christian.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Your friendly oil change.
At Premier Oil Change, we pride ourselves in efficiency and customer service. We love to hear what our guests have to say about us. Mary said,
"Best service yet, guys. Thanks."
Jean commented,
"Always polite, friendly, fast, and efficient."
Pat wrote,
"The crew is always friendly, and they get me in and out."
Lindsay said,
"We always come here, amazing and fast."
Come experience Premier Oil Change for yourself. Our trained technicians will take care of your maintenance while you wait in the comfort and safety of your vehicle. Enjoy free beverages and Wi-Fi while we do the rest. No appointment required, just drive in. Stop by a Premier Oil Change near you today. Visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard next to Waterworks Park. Both locations get you a free car wash with every oil change. Premier Oil Change, home of the friendly oil change.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
KCNR is proud to announce that we are now live at 96.5 FM, as well as online, and as always, heard on 1460 AM. Weekday mornings, wake up with the Sue McClain News Hour, followed by Free Fire Radio, your talk radio station at the epicenter of change in downtown Reading. 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. Noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. 3 to 6, the hard-hitting constitutional expert, Mark Levin. Monday through Thursdays at 6 p.m., local shows feature everything from the paranormal to pop culture to unsung heroes of our area. 7 to 9, Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. And finish your weekday with the Chris Plant Show, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. KCNR, now on 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and always online. More than ever, we're your locally owned, community-connected talk radio.
This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Charles Christian.
Man, I'm really loving these stories, Charles. They're just awesome and sort of beautifully dark. You know, they're nostalgically dark, and they're just really, really, really great. Do you have another one for us?
Yes. Well, I mean, as would happen, when I went to university, college, you'd call it, I used to go on ghost hunting expeditions. I mean, very, very amateurish by modern standards. I'd have a notebook and a friend of mine, would have a camera and we'd have a couple of flasks of coffee and we'd go out to where ghosts were meant to be seen to see if we could see anything happening. And so I spent sizable amount of time freezing to death in various graveyards across the north of England,
yeah,
waiting for ghosts that never arrived, or hoping actually, well, you know, it'd be good if we did see the ghost, but on the other hand, what if we did see the ghost? That would be worrying. And so we had a number of stakeouts. One of the more fascinating ones, I thought, was a thing called the St. Mark's Eve ritual. I don't know if you've heard of this one, but this is that on St. Mark's Eve, if you wait in a churchyard, you will see, I suppose they'd be doppelgangers, of all the people in that parish who are going to be buried in that churchyard over the coming 12 months.
Oh.
And you see their spirits supposedly enter the church. And if the spirit then comes back out of the church, that means they're going to be very seriously ill, but they're going to recover. If they don't come back, then they're doomed to die. And in the north of England, it was a tradition of porch watching. You'd sit in the church porch and wait to see who went through, with obviously various tales of people seeing themselves going through, which
right,
is not good news. And as I say, we did that, and we saw nothing, but we realised we'd made a basic error, that they were no longer burying people in that graveyard, so it was a bit academic. So
right.
Missed out in a sort of schoolboy error there. We didn't quite do our homework.
Well, that explains why you didn't see anything, though.
Yeah, exactly. But I say, but you know, up there, I went to university in a town, city called Leeds in North England, and visited a graveyard there, and there is a very large, very elaborate Edwardian era, you know, the golden decade, you know, just before the First World War, that period.
Mm.
And it is a huge, it's a life-size replica of a front door, and it's partly ajar, and there's a life-size replica of a woman carved in marble standing there. And she's known as Ethel at the Gate. And the tomb was built by her husband, and it was supposedly because back in the day he'd be working in the city, and they lived out of the town, out of the city, and she'd be waiting at the door for him to come back. And it was how he remembered her, the devoted wife. But it soon became apparent, not least the fact that he married a showgirl a few months after her death, that he was a womanizer, and actually the reason he was back late was how he was going with showgirls, and that was totally unfaithful, so it was really a big guilt trip. But in the twilight, seeing it is a particularly spooky scene, particularly now as trees have all grown around it, that it, in a graveyard, a full-size effigy of a woman in white. And curiously, over the last couple of years, flowers have started appearing and being left by this tomb. So nobody knows quite who, because the family all since died out. So I say that was a particular one, you know, coming around the corner in a cemetery and suddenly seeing this in the twilight. But I suppose our most interesting one was in a village we went to, where there was one of the few people, you remember in the, well, you don't remember obviously, but you know, in the Salem witch trials, that one of the witnesses refused, one of the men refused to give any evidence, and so he was crushed to death. They had this thing, if you wouldn't plead guilty or not guilty, they would press you until you either said, I'll talk or I don't talk. And the particular character in the Salem witch trials, and say, can't remember his name off the top of my head, he suffered this fate and supposedly cursed everybody in Salem who did it to him. And lo and behold, within 12 months, three of the people who persecuted him had died. So that goes on. But there was a similar one in England, and this is what we were looking after, and it was a person who, again, with hindsight, we now know that clearly had a mental breakdown and lost his mind and stabbed his wife, didn't kill her but injured her, killed his children, killed their nurse, and then rode off into the night to kill another child, but his horse stumbled and fell on him, and so he was arrested. And again, he was brought for trial, and he knew that if he, in those days, he knew it was no good pleading not guilty because the evidence was such that he'd done it. And he also knew that if he pleaded guilty, then his property would be confiscated and his wife and remaining child would lose their inheritance and become homeless. So he opted not to plead at all. So he was put under the same torture.
Right.
Large wooden doors and packed with weights. And supposedly his last words were, "More weight, more weight," and he died.
Yeah, that's funny.
And the story is that he, because he's buried in this churchyard now, presumably in a very, very wide, flat grave, I'm assuming, that he still...
That's terrible.
I know. Maybe they rolled him up like a carpet.
No. Who needs the carpet to dispose of that body? That's funny.
That he rides round on the eve of the anniversary of his death. He rides around the churchyard on a horse shouting "Ligon, Ligon," which is sort of Yorkshire dialect for "more weight, put more weight on."
Right.
And I say we went to see whether anything happened, but again we didn't see anything. However, it's one of those where there is a story, because there's a school next to the church, and there is a tale that in the 19th century some schoolboys used to do a ritual, and they, on their way home from school, they'd stand by the churchyard, put all their school caps in a pile on the ground, dance round it anti-clockwise, and sing a little chant saying, "Old Sir Walter, old Sir Walter, come out and show yourself. If we not, we'll have you for collops," which is sort of slices of ham. Anyway, schoolboy bravado.
Right.
And then, after you've done that, you blow through the keyhole of the church door and see what happens. And the story is supposedly that one day the ghost did appear, and all the kids the next day in school, they'd lost their caps, they'd run away, their hair had turned white, and say that's a nice bit of legend that is still recited as being true, that they actually did invoke Sir Walter's ghost.
Right.
Awesome. As I say, my ghost story is, you know, we did a lot of it, but we never saw anything. But I think that's probably the way with a lot of ghost hunting, that it's more by luck than judgment that you actually see anything where you go to a place that is reputed to be haunted.
You are listening to our guest Charles Christian here on Radio Wasteland. You can find out more about Charles at urbanfantasist.com, and stick around, come on back, because we have more Weird Tales with Charles Christian.
Hi. Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name. Knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Aloha. This is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price, and after a few months, realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Hi, this is Linda Bott, and let me tell you about our North State Now show on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. right here on KCNR. The first Thursday of the month will be yours truly, covering arts and entertainment and all kinds of fun stuff. The second Thursday will be Michelle Slade, highlighting and interviewing North State heroes. The third Thursday is James Masada and Rhonda Alvey, bringing you all things with Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. And the fourth Thursday from Shasta Regional Medical Center is Dr. Orna Gill, covering all things women's health. The title sponsor for North State Now is the Reading Civic Auditorium, also brought to you by the Black Bear Diner, Shadowcle Center, and Carlene's Restaurant and Bar, located at 1100 Center Street. That's North State Now, right here on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, 6 p.m., North State Now.
This is the best of Radio Wasteland.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us. All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Charles Christian, urban myth and folklore author, as well as host of the Weird Tales radio show.
I was very similar when I was a kid. I was very just sort of interested in the weird stuff. You know, all the normal stuff was normal. I understood that stuff pretty quickly. It was the weird stuff that got my imagination going.
I mean, my father, who he definitely had a bit of a weird view on upbringing. He once told me, I was, say, living on the sea front, and you could go along the beach and onto an area of rocks and rock pools and things, and you could always find, you know, for a kid, there's always plenty of things, you know, fossils or bits and interesting old bits of metal or all manner of things. You know, that thing you do where you see a stone in the water, it looks all shiny. You think, oh, I found a ruby or something, and you get it home and it dries out. It's just a bit of brick.
Right.
But anyway, he said, if you're going on that area, he said, always make sure you carry a sharp knife with you. And again, this is nowadays, certainly in the UK, where they're obsessed with knife crime. We tend to forget that as kids in the 50s, we all had pocket knives and sheath knives and things that, you know, get arrested if you went out with them today. Anyway, so I said, yeah, I always have a knife with me. Why? And he said, well, and then he came out with his tale. And it was, again, one of his schoolmates, when he was at school, had gone out there on the rocks one day, and he'd put his hand into a rock pool because he thought there was something interesting in there, and it had been grabbed by a conger eel. His hand. Now, conger eels, they've got a set of teeth that are a bit like the xenomorph in the Alien. You know, they can clutch.
It just gets worse and worse.
They've got a way that once you're caught by one, you don't get your hand out.
Right.
And they can also do this thing that they can blow up their body, swell it out, so they're in a rock hole and they can sort of wedge themselves in there. So, you know, the story was the poor kid was trapped there, the tide came up, and he drowned, and they found him the next day. And I said, so I take the knife then, so that if I'm trapped, I can stab the conger eel and escape. And my father looked at me and said, no, it's so you can cut your hand off and escape.
Oh, boy.
And once again, you think about it, and you think, who as a kid would have the strength and the mentality to do it, and besides which, the loss of blood and the shock would kill you anyway.
Well, I have to admit that you're now hitting my level of parenting. When my kids were young and they would hurt themselves, they would be all, oh, I hurt my hand, and they'd be freaking out, and I'd be, oh, do you want me to cut it off so it doesn't hurt anymore? And they'd be all, no, I'm fine. Like, so I think I'm guilty of that one.
They were quickly trained to ignore pain.
Yeah.
They're now the perfect killing machine.
Yeah, they were. But that is funny, so yeah. Go ahead.
But I say, that's how you start off, and you only realize later in life what these influences have clearly had on you, and that you possibly end up thinking differently, but you have this intrigue with odd stuff, weird stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it builds on from there.
Well, I hope I, you know, gave my kids some of that. I hope I didn't give them any trauma, but I hope I gave them a little skew on their view of the world. You know?
I don't know that it's possible to parent without a little bit of trauma.
Yeah, no matter what, we all damage our kids somehow. You know?
Yeah.
There's all going to come that conversation in the 30s where we have to decide who's going to pay for their counseling, me or them. You know, whose fault is it?
Yeah.
You know.
I say, sadly, we didn't have time for my the time I was commissioned by a couple of years ago by a national newspaper in the UK to go on a werewolf hunt.
Yeah, I saw that on your website. It said you were a sometimes werewolf hunter.
Let's get this story, because I want to know.
Right. Well, the story is, the background is, I wrote a book about the folklore of an area of England called the Yorkshire Wolds, hilly area, and one of the features of the folklore is that, oh, 1,000 years ago, there were reports that there was a werewolf in the area, and that it would come down with other wolves, and it would attack people, eat them, drag them away, that it lived in a tomb somewhere, that it changed shape so it could frequent among men during the day. Now, that area was known to be frequented by werewolves, but it's an by proper wolves. But it's an intriguing story because werewolves aren't really part of English folklore. They're exceptional. In fact, this is the only one for about 1,000 years. And it was known as Old Stinker because it had a breath that smelled of carrion. Now, I happened to put this in the book, And then about a year or so after the book came out, there were reports in a city called Hull, which was only about 20 miles away from where the werewolf in historical times was living, and people were saying there was a werewolf haunting a part of the town. And a local newspaper who knew I'd written the earlier book contacted me, and I said, well, sounds like old Stinker has come back from the undead and is now moved a bit further south. And so in due course it spread, and it became in that area, and then on, went on to social media, and there were lots of stories about medieval werewolf now hunting, now haunting this town. It was picked up by all manner of newspapers and things, and eventually I got asked if I'd like to go on an actual werewolf hunt on the night of a full moon on the area where the werewolf was seen, said this creature was said to be seen acting, and people were saying, you know, we saw it dragging a dog away, and we've seen all these, it's got red eyes and it's crashing through the undergrowth. And so myself and my wife and a cameraman and a guy from a newspaper, we went out at midnight along this rather spooky overgrown towpath with a little canal down the middle of it where the wolf had been seen. Point where we were having our photographs taken in the churchyard just to go with it. My wife said to me, remind me again why I'm here, how this happened.
Yeah, anyway, that's how mine would be.
And we went down there, and lo and behold, up the other side of this ditch was a creature. You could just see it had two very large orange eyes. They were separated quite a long way, so it was a big creature, and it was making its way through the undergrowth opposite where we were. And fortunately there was a stream between us and a culvert, and we shone our torches on it. We still couldn't make out what it was, but normally when you do something like that, the animal will duck away and hide. But this didn't. It kept following us along the track. And then it disappeared. So, what was it? Had we actually encountered the werewolf? Or, as I suspect more likely, it was probably a very large dog that someone had let loose because it had got too unmanageable and had turned feral and was hunting along that area. Gotta say, that's how I ended up as a member of the werewolf hunting club.
I wonder how big that club is.
Well, you don't see any werewolves in Britain.
A lot of members.
So.
Yeah.
They must be doing their job. Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, we're here at the end of the interview, but man, I'm not sure how much interviewing went on. That was just. I'm totally enthralled by these stories. You know, when I was a kid, I would check out books of ghost stories. I liked the short anthologies where I could, you know, turn through a lot of them and stuff like this. This is definitely one of my loves in life, without a doubt. Where can our audience find out more about you and find out where to get your stuff?
You can find my website, which is urbanfantasist.com, and that has links to everything and to the books I'm working on and the podcasts I do and everything else I do. I am writing a book about the folklore of the area I now live in as well, so that'll be out sometime next year.
And I really appreciate you being on the show, and I would love to have you on again. Karen and I very much enjoyed it.
Yeah.
These conversations. Absolutely great.
Well, thank you, Chelsea. And, we'll speak again.
All right, sounds good.
Have a good day.
You too.
Take care.
You too. All right, you've been listening to Charles Christian here on Radio Wasteland. Thank you for checking us out.